Welcome back, and we'll have some announcements about funerals that are pending. John A. Winnick, 85, of Decatur, died Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016. Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are handling arrangements. Jeffrey Scott Tokars, 43, of Decatur, horticulturalist, died Sunday, July 31st. Massive Christian burial, 10 a.m. Thursday, St. Patrick Catholic Church. Visitations, 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, Moran and Goble Funeral Home, with 4:30 p.m. prayer service. Burial at Graceland Cemetery. Memorials go to St. Patrick's School. Send condolences to www.moranandgoble.com. From Blue Mound, Boyd E. Trimble, 82, of Blue Mound, passed away on Sunday, July 31, at Decatur Memorial. A service to celebrate Boyd's life will be held at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, August 4th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday. The family requests casual attire for Boyd's services. Boyd will be laid to rest in Hall Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be sent to American Cancer Society or special. Kenneth Dale Lewis of Decatur passed away on Friday, July 29, in Symphony of Decatur. Kenny was born on February 18, 1932, in Bement, the son of Rufus Cecil and Mamie Bryan Lewis. Funeral services to celebrate Kenny's life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 4th, in the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home, and memorials are suggested to the American Heart Association. Dorothy Ann Skipper, 95, of Blue Mound, passed away on Saturday, July 30, at Imboden Creek Gardens after a battle with renal disease. A service to celebrate Dorothy's life will be held at 3 p.m. on Thursday, August 4th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation 2 hours prior to services on Thursday. Dorothy will be laid to rest in Hall Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be directed to Blue Mound United Methodist Church Organ Fund or Blue Mound Memorial Library. Ruth Ann Powers, 86, of Decatur, died Saturday, July 30, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private graveside services will be conducted and a memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements by Brinklicker and Earl Funeral. Karen Elaine Lake, age 65, of Cape Coral, Florida, passed away at Hope Hospice in Cape Coral on Thursday, July 28, of cancer. Born September 5, 1950, in Decatur, to Robert Dalton and Arabelle Farrell Dalton, Karen called Florida home for the past 30 years. A celebration of her life was held prior to her death. It was Karen's wish that her ashes be scattered at the beach at sunset. Memorial contributions are welcome to Hope Hospice Development Office, 9470 Health Park Circle, Fort Myers, Florida, 33908. Kent G. Davis, formerly of Decatur, passed away October 21, 2015, in Florida after a lifelong battle with epilepsy. He was born January 15, 1961, to Delbert and Sandra Davis, who preceded him in death. A memorial service will be held at the First Church of God in Lovington, Illinois, on August 6th at 3 p.m., with Pastor Rodney Hauser officiating. Shirley Jean Osland, maiden name Steimitz, 81, of Decatur, passed away peacefully at 7:02 a.m. on July 31, 2015, in Fairhaven's Christian Home, survived by her husband of 36 years, Larry A. Osland. Services to celebrate Shirley's life will be held with a visitation in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on Thursday, August 4th at 2 p.m. until time of service at 3 p.m. with Gerald Marietta speaking. Entombment will be at the Mary Queen of Angels Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery immediately following the service. Memorials are suggested to Rock Springs Conservation Area. And Donna Kemp, 69, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, July 31, at her residence. She was born November 11, 1946, in Decatur. the daughter of Thomas R. and Alina Aline Cox Hanks. Surviving are her husband, David Kemp of Decatur, and children. The family would like to express a special thank you to Terry Leibel and Danelle Carnahan. Services to celebrate Donald's life will be at 11 a.m. Friday, August 5th, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services. Entombment will be at the Star of Hope Mausoleum. Memorials are suggested to the Decatur Genealogy Society. Lois J. Spa, 94 of West Branch, Michigan, formerly of Decatur, passed away on June 26. A graveside service to celebrate her life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, August 6th at Graceland Cemetery. Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel is assisting the family with arrangements. Percy Meeks, Jr. of Decatur, passed away peacefully Friday morning, July 29, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. He was the fifth of 12 children. Born April 28, 1948, to Percy Lee Meeks Sr. and Mattel Meeks in Canton, Mississippi. Services celebrating his life will be held with a visitation on Friday, August 5th, 2016, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Main Street Church, 2000 North Main Street. Funeral service will be 12 noon Saturday, August 6th, 2016, with visitation 1 hour prior to service. Burial will be at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service, www.walkerfs.com. Robert W. Olson, 85 of Decatur, passed away on July 27, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. He was born in Downers Grove, 1931, the son of Angeline and Raymond Olson, and married Barbara Reese in Chicago in 1958. Of all his accomplishments, Bob was most proud of his two children, and he was a devoted grandfather. A memorial service will be held at Decatur First United Methodist Church on Saturday, August 6th at 4 p.m. There'll be a time to gather with the family from 2 to 4 p.m. in the church library. Brintlicker and Earl Funeral Home Decatur will be assisting the family with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts are suggested to Decatur First United Methodist Church or Lincoln Trails Council of the Boy Scouts of America. Condolences may be made to the family at www.brintlingerandearl.com. And in the government section, still in development, City Fiber Network's plans opposed. This is a story by Allison Petty. As the Decatur City Council prepares to explore fiber network expansion, opposition to the plans has arisen from the telecommunications industry. City and economic development leaders began several years ago to study fiber, which provides the opportunity for high-speed, high-capacity internet. A study session to explore options previously scheduled for Monday was pushed back to August 15 because of new information, City Manager Tim Gleason said. There's interest in this, and when I put possibilities and options in front of the council and the community, I want it to be as complete as it possibly can be, he said. In 2014, the city built a fiber backbone of 144 strands connecting its facilities along Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Several council members in March seemed generally supportive of a plan to link the backbone with Richland Community College, which is hooked up to a single statewide network. The ultimate goal would be to develop a fiber loop around the city, which officials have said could promote economic development. The city would not become an internet provider, but could lease the strands to companies that would. We were never going to be a retailer. That was never the plan, Gleason said. Earlier this year, the Illinois Telecommunications Association began publicly raising objections. It represents 47 telecommunication companies and about 80 others that provide products and services to those companies. In an April letter to council members, President Rancy Neart said there's already plenty of fiber provided in Decatur by companies such as AT&T. He said fiber is available to all Decatur businesses through the private sector. The letter also cited the failure of government-owned fiber networks in other cities, saying fiber projects pose a risk to taxpayer resources, and asserted that the plan doesn't make economic sense for business or taxpayers. We just feel that tax dollars would be better spent on other vital city services rather than building out a network and overbuilding services that already exist in the community, Neert said in a recent interview with Herald and Review. The next phase of the project had been estimated to cost $700,000, with funding possibilities including a municipal loan that would be repaid from the fees generated by those companies leasing fiber and savings the city could experience in its operations. Pricing and possibilities are charging as the city continues changing as the city continues to investigate, Assistant City Manager Billy Tice said. To tell a municipality that it should not investigate or look into or pursue opportunities to grow the community is a bit presumptuous, Tyus said. I think we have a responsibility as government officials to do what that if we're looking for ways to better our city. Gleason said he planned to present several options to the council. One would be doing nothing, which would mean walking away from the potential created by the $500,000 investment in the fiber backbone that's already installed. Building the next phase of the project could come with several possibilities, which might include making the fiber available exclusively to government entities, he said. The chance to connect to the Illinois Century Network at Richland is an unexpected opportunity that fell into the city's lap, Gleason said. The stuff that's currently being offered to the community is diminished, or if you truly want the best stuff that's available, you're paying a lot for it. It's quite costly. Continuing its opposition, the Telecommunications Association commissioned a poll of 588 Decatur registered voters in May, which said it showed that the community does not want its elected leaders to pursue the fiber development. There's a story by Chris Lisvardi. Local motor fuel tax projects hit a speed bump. The start of Decatur's road projects utilizing a newly implemented local motor fuel tax will be delayed after the City Council decided Monday to reopen bids for the work. City Manager Tim Gleason said proposals for the projects came in $250,000 to $300,000 lower than expected and recommended to the council that the city should try to get more done for the $1.5 million allocated to be spent in 2016. The council was split 4-3 on the issue. Gleason said the projects can be rebid and work can still start by mid-September, remaining in time to finish by the end of the year. If the bids had been approved, work could have been on schedule to start in mid-August, Gleason said. This is a unique opportunity to do even more work, Gleason said. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the council wants to be careful with how the money is used, considering it's a new tax. I want to get the most roads done with the tax, Moore Wolf said. It's hitting all of us. Pushing the projects back a month shouldn't make a big difference in order to get more questions answered before proceeding, Moore Wolf said. Councilman Pat McDaniel suggested work proceed for projects on which bids had already been submitted and the bidding process reopen for more work to make up the difference. We don't want to get the reputation of playing games, McDaniel said. Then you get fewer contractors and bidders. This is not good business. McDaniel voted, along with Councilwoman Lisa Gregory and Dana Ray, to keep the bids that were submitted. Moore Wolf voted against accepting the bids, along with Councilman Jerry Dawson, Bill Faber, and Chris. And also by Chris Lisvardi, Moore Wolf to seek election as Decatur mayor. Julie Moore Wolf announced plans Monday to seek another term as mayor of Decatur. She became mayor last year following the death of Mayor Mike McElroy, and if elected, wants to continue the legacy McElroy started. The 2017 municipal elections will be the first time Moore Wolf has run for mayor, but she was previously elected twice to the city council. With another term in office, Moore Wolf wants to continue working to improve the community and seek unity among various groups in the city. I believe in this community, said Moore Wolf, 56, who has lived in Decatur 30 years. We've got to keep putting the pieces in place. Moore Wolf was joined by family members, business representatives, and other community members during an announcement in the Decatur Civic Center. No other candidate has yet declared their intention to run for mayor. For more on this story, there's an article in Tuesday's Herald. By Justin Kahn, street repairs on agenda for city council. The extra nickel being spent at pumps in Decatur will begin yielding street repairs this month after action at tonight's Decatur City Council meeting. The council will vote to approve an ordinance to take out a $7.5 million loan from Busey Bank to be repaid with proceeds from the local motor fuel tax passed in March. We've begun collecting the motor fuel tax, but this allows us to get the funding up front and move forward with the work, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said. The city will also vote to start spending that money with resolutions to accept a bid of $978,115 from R.W. Dunnerman Company for asphalt work and $385,000 from Autobahn for the concrete. The city has established a website, buildingdecatur.com, that shows where street work paid by both local and state taxes will be performed. This article is by Allison Petty, coming out of Monticello. Farmers get a look at stream bank fixes. Jamie Stroger knew the stream would become a problem. Running through the rural Piatt County property where Stroger raises cattle, the water was cutting into soil beneath the bank, carving out as much as 2 feet. It cut more and more into the pasture, said Stroger, 40. Sooner or later, it was going to take out that corner, and then it would eventually take the fence between me and the neighbor. So when he found out that funding might be available to help pay for a fix, Stroger immediately contacted the Piatt County Soil and Water Conservation District. The district and the Piatt County Farm Bureau collaborated on securing grant funding to help Stroger and two other property owners with stream bank problems. Stroger ended up paying about a fifth of the roughly $19,000 cost to stabilize the stream. Without the grants, we wouldn't have been able to do this project, he said. The Illinois Farm Bureau provided a nutrient stewardship grant, and the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District helped with an Illinois Environmental Protection Agency grant. On Wednesday, other farmers got a chance to see the improvements for themselves and ask questions at a stream bank restoration field day hosted by the Piatt County Conservation District and Piatt County Farm Bureau. About 20 farmers attended with the conversation continuing. Preventing erosion reduces the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus entering the water supply, said Jonah Totten, conservationist for the Piatt County Soil and Water Conservation District. Erosion from land within the 925 square miles of Lake Decatur's watershed area can ultimately end up in the lake. Sediment buildup is an expensive problem to have, as the city is currently in the middle of a six-year, $991 million dredging effort. The big thing with stream banks is sediment reduction, said Megan Baskerville, watershed specialist for the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District, who also spoke Wednesday. You know, every time you're stopping a particle of sediment that has nutrients tied to it, they are staying in place. Wayne Kinney, a stream bank specialist with Midwest Streams and Company, who has retired from working for the Natural Resources Conservation Services, designed the projects exhibited Wednesday. The other one shown involved arranging large rocks in the stream in such a way as to keep it from cutting deeper in time. Streams are dynamic, he said. Stabilizing them is not as simple as planting vegetation or dropping rocks in a creek. In fact, while many people think trees can help with erosion, they aren't real solutions, he said. If the stream is unstable, it will undermine the trees and take them in. Lake Decatur dredging moves into Basin 2, article by Allison Petty. Dredging operations on Lake Decatur have made their way into Basin 2, generally the area of the lake most populated by boaters. The work started there early last week, said Jerry Stevens, engineering services coordinator for the city's water management department. Crews previously were dredging in the Big Creek area. Great Lakes Dredge and Dock, the city's contractor for the $91 million dredging project, is now about 30% complete with the work, which began in the fall of 2014. The city so far has gained about 15 extra days of water, with a total of 52 additional days expected after the end of the six-year effort. Boaters should stay at least 150 feet away from the dredge at all times, Stevens said, as well as away from the pipe that floats in the back of it. They've got a lot of lights and things to locate and warn the boaters about where the piping is, Stephen said. We knew that was going to be a little bit more of an inconvenience because that's where most of the boat traffic is, and that's around Sand Creek. Chuck Cool announces Decatur City Council run, also by Allison Petty. Chuck Cool, KUHLE, a former Macon County board member and longtime tennis director for the Decatur Athletic Club, announced his candidacy for Decatur City Council on Monday. 57, Cool stressed his lifelong connection to Decatur, emphasizing his focus on the positive aspects of the city. We can't control how we speak about our city, said Cool, who recently became general manager of the athletic club and has been its director of tennis for 36 years. We're all ambassadors of our city, and we all need to remember the positives about our lives here. We can control our work ethic and be successful in Decatur. Cool said his top priorities would be lakefront development and jobs. He said he hopes to work closely with the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, which he viewed as the experts for job creation in Decatur. He's a graduate of MacArthur High School and received a bachelor's in law and human behavior from U.S. International University in San Diego. Cool also serves as director of tennis for the Decatur Park District during the summer. He is a tournament director of the USTA slash Ursula Beck Pro Tennis Classic, which he founded in 1999. Cool served on the Macon County Board for 3 terms between 1990 and 2000. While people in Decatur can't control the global economy and how it affects local businesses, everyone has an opportunity to give back in some way, he said. We're all experts in some part of our lives. We all need to use that expertise to give back to Decatur by creating an event, volunteering, serving on a committee, or just being more positive to those non-residents that we talk with. During his announcement speech, Cool said that criticizing the council's past decisions is not the focus of his campaign. Later asked to name a recent decision in which, with which he disagreed, he said he thought angled parking downtown needed to be revisited. I know they wanted to create more parking downtown, but at the cost of safety, I'm not so sure, he said. The election is in April. Decatur Park District Commissioner Chris Riley also said he is running, and Councilman Pat McDaniel said last week that he will seek another term. 3 council seats will be at Gambling and celebration hours draw council focus. This is also by Allison Petty. After hearing from the public, Decatur City Council members seemed ready Monday to continue moving toward restrictions on the number of video gambling parlors in the city. The council held a study session to seek comments about video gambling as it contemplates changes. Most of those who spoke were business owners, either of bars or parlors. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe has said repeatedly that the council decided to allow video gambling in 2012 with an eye toward helping struggling bars and taverns make ends meet. If we would have really understood the possibilities, we would have been smarter about this, and we would have had bigger restrictions, she said. This was about trying to help existing or locally owned bars and restaurants. City staff members in the coming weeks will prepare options for the council to limit the parlors. Council members have also expressed a willingness to raise the fee for machines, and city staff is expected to present information on how much it costs the city to issue machine licenses. Bar owners said the addition of more gambling parlors, which sometimes offer free food and drinks, have cut into their revenue from the machines. Things have been really tough, said Kim Logan, co-owner of the Sundown Lounge. A lot of places in a lot of locations that are neighborhood bars or businesses that have been here for quite some time would not be here without the help of gaming machines. Greg Meisenhalter has a perspective as both a parlor and bar owner. He co-owns 4 Debbie's video gambling parlors throughout Decatur, owns Lock, Stock, and Barrel, and co-owns the winery. Meisenhalter did not speak at the council meeting, but said he previously shared information about his business with City Manager Tim Gleason. While some of the parlors are doing well, others barely break even after covering payroll, utilities, and operating costs. Revenue from the machines also did not help his bar business the way Meisenhalter thought it would. He said he hoped the council would consider a happy medium when seeking fee increases for machines. If they want to raise it a little bit, I understand why, he said. If they want to raise it a lot, I feel like that's going to become greedy and they're going to end up shooting themselves in the foot. In other business, the council declined to extend Decatur Celebration's hours to midnight on Friday and Saturday at the event. The request, which would have extended liquor sales until that time, caused some council members to worry about security. Celebration producer Lori Sturgill said the extra hours would have generated as much as 10,000 more over the course of the weekend. The event organizers are seeking to help it become self-sustaining. The council ultimately approved a liquor permit that would allow Celebration to continue until 11 p.m. on Friday, August 5th and Saturday, August 2nd. Sixth, the same hours as previous years. Moore Wolf also took a moment to praise Decatur Interim Chief of Police James Getz for his handling of an incident last week in which a Decatur police officer shot a man who was reportedly armed with a knife and a BB gun that resembled a handgun. The Illinois State Police is investigating the incident. Though the police officer was white and the man was black, the incident did not spark the unrest that many other cities have seen in the aftermath of police shooting. Involved shootings. The police department has worked with Janelle Norman, president of the Decatur branch of the NAACP, and other community members to develop a response team for such a scenario. Moore Wolf said she appreciated the work that Getz and Norman have done over the past year to establish open communication. Audience members applauded after the mayor's comments, and during the meeting, council members wore blue ribbons signifying their support for law enforcement, part of a campaign Councilman Pat McDaniel said he wants to start after recent police killings in Dallas and Baton Rouge. Speaking after the meeting, Gertz said the department has received many positive messages from the community, and he appreciated the gesture of support from the council. The story is by Ryan Voiles. County expects public feedback on law enforcement tax. A potential tax increase to cover the rising costs of law enforcement is likely headed to the November ballot. The proposal, which is expected to be passed by the Macon County Board during its meeting tonight, is called the law enforcement tax and would increase the current tax from 0.25% up to 0.5%. The increase could bring in more than $2 million more than the current $2.5 million raised yearly by the tax. Money from the tax goes into a fund that helps cover the cost of law enforcement, such as the county sheriff's office and court operations. Once approved by the county board, the proposal to increase the tax will be put up to a public vote in November as an item on the general election ballot. Who knows whether it will be passed, but it's something we should offer to the voters to see their feelings on it, said Jay Dunn, County Finance Committee's chairman. Funding for the sheriff's office as well as the state's attorney's office and court operations have been stretched as salaries and benefits increase, as well as the need to upgrade equipment and technology. The current tax brings in $2.5 million per year, forcing the county to cover the other $2.5 million of the sheriff's budget with money from a general fund, which covers day-to-day county operations. But reserved money from the general fund has started to dwindle as the county entered the current fiscal year with a general fund balance of $5.4 million, nearly $3 million less than the beginning of the previous budget year and its lowest point since 2007. If the ballot measure fails, Dunn said the Finance Committee will approach next year's budgeting process with the understanding that hefty cuts must be made in the sheriff's office. In other business, the county is expected to approve a plan that will give Decatur's Park District police officers the power to use police powers outside of parks. The plan, which has already been approved by the Decatur Park Board, would allow district officers to do follow-up investigations and other types of general law enforcement practices that may have originated in the parks. The plans would not allow them to run routine traffic enforcement or minor traffic violations in between parks. The plan was unanimously approved by the county's finance committee. The county board meets at 6 p.m., room 514 in the Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street. Thank you. This has been Mary reading from the August 3rd edition of the Herald and Review.